What's the 411? 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. This edition of 411 Teen opens a five-segment series, Common Sense. It consists of five 16-year-olds from Rickards High School examining today's political climate and the 2016 presidential election. Common Sense is the brainchild of Hannah Quiros, who describes herself as a neo-millennium coming of age in America, where every incident of dissension is immortalized in the 24-hour news cycle. The Common Sense Project aims to create a radio forum for local teens from a diverse array of political affiliations: progressive, libertarians, Democrats, Republicans. The Common Sense panel seeks to maintain a substantive political dialogue and addresses the political climate and presidential election of 2016. So tap into the pulse of young folks. Teens share their views and their perspectives on today's political climate. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and I am very glad to welcome the IB contingency. Everyone here today is a junior in the IB program at Rickards High School. So I welcome Hannah Quiros. She is into international relations, and she likes Kanye West, and she's into a lot of things, but glad to have you.
Glad to be here.
Quinn Huckaba. Quinn also is at Rickards, and he is into physics and government and international relations and dance.
Thank you for letting me on here.
Oh, I'm looking forward to talking with you. Olivia Saunders. She is into LGBTQ plus rights, international affairs, and history.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. Sarah Halbert. Sarah's thing is history and psychology and art and diplomacy.
It's nice to be here.
And Dina, I'm going to say your last name first. Sorry about that. Chanda Dina Day Allen. I got that right. Wow. She's into reading and science and Scottish history and math.
I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, I'm glad to have you. I'm looking forward to talking to all of you. You know, it's always great to have perspectives from young folks, because you all are really what counts, you know? You are the ones who are headed to dealing with all this madness. So let's explore, first of all, before we really get into the meat of things, with this first edition, I'd like to talk about common sense and how it evolved and what, why you're involved and what you find appealing. So let's go with that. Why common sense? And I'll look to you and to all of you to answer if you may have comments.
Well, I noticed that the phrase common sense was thrown around a lot in political rhetoric, like with common sense gun control and common sense conservatism. And it's usually used when you're introducing an idea that you're trying to paint as being universal or super rational. But we're also constantly being told that this election is anything but rational, and it's bizarre and unconventional. And but to us, it's not so bizarre, because this is the first election that we can really comprehend, because I know for the 2012 election, we mostly focused on maybe the epic rap battle of history that came out and things of that nature. So now I think that we have an interesting perspective, considering the fact that, you know, when Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton discuss college reforms and their tax plans, those are issues that are going to impact us. So, you know, it's prudent for us to form opinions. But we're also 16, so our opinions can't really offend anyone, because they're not going to, you know, impact anything as of now. So I think we have valuable opinions that are less likely to offend than most. So I feel this is why we should – I think that provides a good, you know, initiative to discuss them on a forum like this.
Okay. And I guess what's the significance of the name common sense? Because I tell you something my brother always said, common sense ain't common.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, you know, you would think it would be, but it's not. But what is the significance? Just because they use that term all the time?
Yeah, I think especially because when you're using the phrase common sense, you assume that you're referring to a common people, and the U.S. is such a diverse, you know, it's a diverse country, and we have, even within Rickards High School, we have people from like 20 countries in a room. So when you use the phrase common sense, it's not applicable to most of the people that you're trying to speak to. And it's thrown around so often and so loftily when you don't want to explain an idea. And I feel like, you know, when we're deciding who our next president is going to be, we have to go into what common sense means to them.
Okay. How did all of you become involved? And I'll just, whomever, we'll go around the table. Olivia.
So Hannah contacted me. Well, she first told me about her idea a few months ago, but she really contacted me about being involved with it a couple weeks ago. And I thought it was a really great idea, and I'm super interested in politics, so.
Okay.
Hannah contacted me a few days ago, actually.
That makes me look horrible.
But I was really interested, though. Yeah, I was really interested in it because I love politics. The atmosphere at Rickards is very conducive to political discussion and things like that, so I thought it would be a great opportunity.
Okay.
Yep. Hannah contacted me yesterday, and it was a great idea, you know. I don't usually agree to things like this quick, but I thought it was really worth my while, and I would love to be part of it, and it makes so much sense, and especially in this upcoming election and our time, you know, I thought it was great, and I was like, yeah, I'd definitely be here.
And?
Yeah, the same. Hannah contacted me last night, like 9 o'clock, and she goes, well, this person can't make it. Do you want to go? And I saw it on Instagram, and I thought, that's really cool, and I would really like to do that because I really want people to have an opinion, even though we're 16 and can't really do anything. It's really good to get something out there, so I asked about it, and I thought it was awesome. I totally wanted to do it.
Yeah. How did you all become interested in politics, given, and you've all said, I can't do anything, I don't really have an influence, but what is it about politics that you find, you know, just so interesting?
I think initially I wanted to defend myself a little bit, just because initially the lineup I had was four teens from Rickards. One was from Childs, actually, but I realized pretty quickly that we were all basically moderate Democrats who would, you know, reluctantly support the Democratic nominee or, you know, generally adhere to Democratic ideals. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, Trond has a very, you know, very adamant, very positive Hillary Clinton supporter, and Quinn is more conservative. And I feel like those are viewpoints that are vital to the discussion, and you can't really have a discussion if we're all agreeing.
Hannah, all a praise to you. I mean, you are why this happened. And I mean, I think this is fantastic. And, you know, the fact that maybe you just called somebody does not matter because, I mean, you have set this up perfectly.
Okay.
I mean, we really, and I appreciate it. I mean, you know, this is the first series that I have done. So this is something that we will be doing throughout, as you know, the election. And we'll do the last one after the election, so you'll be able to kind of reflect and talk about what you think went down and what happened. So you're great, and we applaud you, really.
Okay, thank
you. Know,
you.
And I appreciate just the thought that you put into it. You know, that you wanted to have diverse opinions. Okay, you recognize that diversity is important. So you could have been one-sided and just had all those people were thinking alike. What would that have accomplished? Absolutely nothing. So, again, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, we thank you.
Yeah.
The rest of you, how'd you get involved in politics?
Well, I don't really know how I got involved with it, but I think something that I just love about politics is that it has the power to affect so many people. I mean, there's obviously, like, the bigger, like, civil rights movements that are really vital, but mm-hmm. also politics controls how much my parents pay in taxes, what the school building I go to school in is like. So, I don't know. I just think that we have kind of a duty to be involved with it and to understand what's going on.
Okay.
Doesn't matter. Go for it, Quinn, and we'll go on around.
Okay. Well, I agree with Ollie in that I think it's our duty to really study politics as part of what we should do as an American citizen is be informed on the current events. But what really interested me in politics was that it's the way that people try to keep everything civil between themselves. It's the way that they keep everything from falling apart when it comes mm-hmm. to society and things like that all around the world, not just in America.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I really liked that idea of let's all try to work together even though we're completely different and come from completely different backgrounds. Let's try to work together to come to some kind of solution that we're all happy with.
Okay.
I probably got into politics because when I grew up, like, my parents, it was just a natural, like, introduction, even, like, watching the news every day, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And being a teenager and being into politics is probably not really common.
No.
But now, with this election, I'm pretty sure it's kind of growing with its popularity. And so I just, being a teenager and getting into politics and, like, it's not many people can relate with what's happening, and they're like, no, maybe we don't matter, it doesn't matter, we're not going to have an impact, but like, we're there, we're literally the next generation of voters,
right,
and
indeed.
We need to be informed.
And we need to hear your opinions. Mm-hmm. You know, so, and you touched on something that was very important, because often we do think that young folks are apathetic. And many times they are, so, you know, so, but you all are unique. And I mean, that's something that's great. And it's something that needs to be cultivated, because you are tomorrow, almost tomorrow today. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you need to be involved. Yes, ma'am. And how did you come this way?
Well, I mean, I grew up in a pretty moderate household. We didn't really discuss politics all that much. But I think with the upcoming election, now that I'm old enough to understand it, and through different clubs in my school, I've gotten into diplomacy and talking about politics, that now I'm adhering to the news and I'm discussing which candidate would be better and what sort of things that I'm interested concerning, you know, human rights and political rights and all of that. And I think it's sort of good.
Mm-hmm. Do you all hold the same political ideology as your parents, or do you differ?
I think I differ in some ways, but for the most part, it's pretty similar.
Okay. I think with the case with a lot of immigrants, and I think Ethiopians, they tend to be very socially conservative but economically liberal. And I know that I think I'm certainly, like, when I'm watching different TV shows and reacting to different things, and I guess just, I don't know, the cultural landscape of the U.S., I'm certainly more socially liberal than my mother, but my mother was also a very strong Bernie Sanders supporter, so we end up supporting, I think, the same guys eventually, mm-hmm. but typically because of different reasons.
Okay. All right. Well, I tell you what, I'm going to have you hold your thoughts. I want to hear from all of you, but it's about time for us to take a brief break. You're tuned into 411 Teen Weekly Program, and this is the start of a new series that will go through the election. We're going to take a break, but we'll get right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and this is the beginning of a 5-series interviews with students from the Rickards Contingency, the IB program. All of them are in the 11th grade. We had to take a brief break, but we are now back, and I had posed the question to you of where you sit when you compare your political ideology to your parents. And I guess I had gotten to Quinn.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you want to continue, because I wanted to hear everyone. I wanted to get everyone's opinion on this. Okay.
Well, my household is pretty moderate, I'd say. My dad is an independent, and my mom is somewhat conservative, but she doesn't lean too far to the right. Mm-hmm. So I would say that my beliefs are pretty in line with them. We differ on some things, obviously.
Of course.
Everyone does, but normally we end up supporting the same people,
okay,
even though for different reasons.
Okay.
My political foundation is definitely heavily influenced by my parents. We have similar opinions on most political things, but, like, especially now where we have these huge new social reforms and so many things are happening, we may differ, but mostly because of what's important to my generation and what was important to their generation. So,
okay. Fair.
I'm not really sure. I think my dad is pretty moderate. No party affiliation like Quinn.
Mm-hmm.
But my mom is sort of Democrat. It's hard to tell because she can't really vote. But I know that the 2008 election and the 2012 election really sort of set my political views for myself as well as the upcoming election, because I think I'm, unlike the rest of my family, I think I'm a little bit more liberal in most of the things that I look at. But now that this election has sort of taken a different turn than we thought it was going to, I think we agree on a lot of things now. So,
okay.
I think that a lot of my political indoctrination, my political doctrine has come from NPR in a lot of ways, because me and my dad, we, in the car, we would listen, and he would comment on the things that were going on. And I know, like, this week, you did a story on Humana dropping out of the public healthcare market, and I know that my dad was talking about we really need a public option, and I went home, I researched it, and I found I agreed with him. Uh-huh. And I know that just, especially when I was younger, my parents really indoctrinated their beliefs in me, because with our gifted class, they asked us what the difference between a Democrat and a Republican was. And I remember saying, Democrats care about the poor, Republicans care about themselves. And I know I outraged and offended everyone in the room, but it's just things that I've heard.
That was your take on
it. Yeah, I've heard my parents spew, and I know that's not true. My opinions have a lot more nuance, but I think, especially when I was younger, their views were my own. But now I've branched off a little bit.
Well, what do you all think about this current campaigning that has been going on both sides?
I don't think it's like Hannah said earlier, this is the first election that we've really been exposed mm-hmm. to. So I'm not sure that to us it's that abnormal. I think we're both, I can't speak for anyone else, but as for myself, I'm pretty acclimatized to it.
Okay. All right.
I do think I can see a little bit of similarity between the two parties. You know, there's times in history when parties realign, and it normally happens when the two parties have a lot of beliefs that are really similar and people feel like they have no real option in the election.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see that just because of my knowledge of other elections, but I can't see it as a child growing up because, like they all said.
Well, I don't want you to compare it to what it was like when you were growing up. I'm just saying, what's your take on it right now? Mm-hmm. As you sit back and you read and you hear comments or whatever, How does it hit you? How do you interpret that? How does it strike you one way or the other? So you don't have to compare it to anything else, but just where you sit, you look like you wanted to say something.
Yeah, I feel like there's substantially less talk on policy as than there's been like in the 2008 and 2012 elections, just from my experience and knowledge of them, because especially within like the Republican primary, I feel like there was Marco Rubio making the small hands jabs at Donald Trump and things of that nature, where sometimes I felt like I was watching a roast rather than a debate. So I feel like the focus has been a lot more on rhetoric than actual policy, even though I think policy is quintessential to the American electorate. And social media has also played, a very critical role in this election, especially, the advent of Twitter. Well, not the advent. It's been around for a while, but,
But it certainly has awakened during this time.
I think it seems a lot of the time as if it's, not to be hypercritical, but it's Donald Trump's campaign manager in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And, Hillary Clinton shooting back, delete your Twitter account. And it seems, I think, a lot more catty than previous elections. And I think particularly a little less dignified on both sides, but I'm not sure if that's, responsive mm-hmm. or reflexive, but it's very strange.
Yeah, no, we want your opinion, Sean.
Okay, I know the politics and stuff, it's not as, great as it was before in all these other elections, and this being my first, election that I'm really aware, mm-hmm. I actually think that it's great that this is happening. I mean, we have so much controversy is going on, and it's drawing us all into politics. I mean, it may not be for politics at first, but, especially if you weren't into politics before, it's like, hey, this is kind of interesting. Let me look further, and then you kind of naturally flow into the world of politics.
It's sort of like a three-ring circus, and circuses are always kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, no matter where you sit, it's like, oh, what's going to happen in this ring? You know, what's going to go down? Sarah, do you agree, disagree? Where are you coming from?
I agree with Hannah that it doesn't really feel like campaigning. It feels mm-hmm. like banter back and forth on Twitter and on social media. I saw a political ad a little while back, both for Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, of, you know, Donald Trump is showing off where his stuff was made. And then Hillary Clinton shooting back, oh, it's not made in America, it's made in China. Make America great again? Question mark. But it just feels like comedy. I mean, with the Ted Cruz as the Zodiac Killer and
that was really
chilling
cool.
in Cedar Rapids. It just, it doesn't feel like they're actually trying to accomplish anything but trying to make the other person look bad.
I think it is, like, I think we're all right in a sense because it feels, in a sense, less dignified, but it's also, like, super entertaining. And I know a lot of people in my family, like, we watch MSNBC with the same, like, vigor and attentiveness that we'd watch The Bachelor sometimes. Just because especially Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, and I guess to some degree Hillary Clinton, they're incendiary candidates in the sense that when Bernie Sanders calls for a revolution, you're like, wow, revolution seems cool, you know? That seems like something that would spark your interest. So there, a lot more heads are certainly turning to the, like, you know, political landscape in the U.S. And while, I don't know, I think I'm also a postmodernist in, like, the sense that I think the distinction between, like, you know, having something, making something accessible to the masses doesn't make it any less dignified. So I also agree with what Chanda's saying in that even though the level of discourse I think has gone down a little bit, many more people are actually involved in it, which empowers our democracy.
Quinn.
This just, again, going back to my feeling that the two parties aren't really that different this year. I think that a lot of that cattiness is coming from the fact that they don't really have many things to argue about. I mean, they do have a lot of things to argue about, but it's not the things that we're used to. You know, it's not fiscal, the fiscal budget. It's not social problems in the same way. I mean, Donald Trump supports Obamacare. That's not normal for a Republican candidate. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of things that they interconnect on, and that's – I mean, a lot of heads are turning in the media, but a lot of people just are kind of confused, I feel like. I'm confused.
I mean, well, you're by yourself.
I know. It doesn't matter right now because I can't vote, but
I mean, your opinion will, like, impact the future of the world.
So, you know, you all don't need to play yourselves down because maybe though you can't vote, you can express an opinion. And when you look at the past two elections, it was the young vote, really, that put Obama in the first time, and it was the young vote that kept him in, you know? So your opinions are important, and especially here on 411 Teen, because that's what we're about. We want to hear your opinions. I mean, really, genuinely, we want to hear your opinions. Who has not responded? I think, Olivia, you had something you wanted to say.
Oh, well, it was just kind of relating to what Quinn was saying. I also feel like the reason that we're not really talking about the issues is also, like, kind of partially because of young people and also just because people are switching parties. And I'm thinking right now of, like, Bernie or bust supporters that just don't want to vote Hillary, so they're voting for Donald Trump. But they were going to vote for Bernie because they wanted, like, his more socialist programs. I mean, that's obviously a strong word, but, like, his programs that were more for social reform. So I think that if Donald Trump, like, talks about what he actually wants to do with taxes, like, he's going to lose those voters.
So you think that's why he skirts some of the issues and doesn't
address them? And Hillary Clinton does it, too. I mean, she's not really talking about it either because she wants all of the more moderate conservatives to lean her way.
Mm-hmm.
She
mm-hmm.
knows if she talks about, like, wide-ranging social reform, no one's going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also – oh, thank you. I also think that I disagree with the notion that the parties are diverging and coming closer. I think that after a two-term presidency, we typically have a change election where people, you know, are tired of the status quo. But I also think the reason why it seems like they're coming closer is because
no one is, like, especially, I know in preparation for this, a month ago, I looked at the policy, like, platforms for each of the candidates, and Hillary Clinton has, like, she has, like, maybe two or three paragraph little, like, snippets that you can read, and then links to further resources, and Donald Trump has, like, 40-second videos with, like, a catchphrase at the end. And the reason, I don't think that they're diverging, I think that the Republican, like, I don't know, I think they're, not the Republican Party, but I think Donald Trump specifically isn't, I don't know if he's not informed enough, but he's not making the initiative, or he's not putting the effort forth to discuss substantive policy issues. And I don't think it's that they're similar. I think they don't have a lot to talk about because they're, on the Republican side at least, like, the opinions aren't even fully formed yet.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, I agree with you, but that's really Donald Trump's way of campaigning is he uses one word or a phrase over and over again and he repeats it and he's really good at it. Mm-hmm. He's almost like, you know, a television host or a radio announcer.
Well, he is.
Yeah.
He kind of is. Right.
But I do think that the fact that he came in kind of without preparing first, it seemed like that to me when he came in, was that he came in without preparing and he just would kind of say things and contradict himself. I feel like he's spending the rest of the campaign backtracking, and that's why he doesn't – he's trying to form his strong platform now, whereas Clinton had it ready when she ran against Obama.
I also think, though, that, like, Clinton had to have a pretty strong platform because when Donald Trump won the Republican nomination, it was largely because of, like, partially splits in the more conventional faction, but also just because of, like, radicalism in the party. So when he said crazy – well, to me it's crazy. I guess there's some people who agree with it. When he says things that are – unusual for a candidate to say. I mean, there were a lot of people in the Republican Party who didn't really want to hear his platform. Like, that was all they needed to hear. But, like, I think Clinton had kind of a harder primary in a sense because they didn't really see Bernie Sanders coming. And a lot of Bernie Sanders voters were actually, like, pretty focused on his issues and pretty willing to name issues with Hillary Clinton that – issues of Hillary Clinton's that they didn't agree with. So I think that, like – I don't know. If Hillary Clinton didn't have that platform out, like, she wouldn't be able to maintain her reputation as the status quo candidate.
Do you think there's a double standard for Hillary Clinton because she's a woman? And that's to all of you. Yeah.
I think there's a double standard because she's Hillary Clinton and everyone's just, like, inclined to hate her. And, I mean, I think that she's not a squeaky clean lady. I think that one of the things that I especially relate to her too is that when she was giving her Wellesley like commencement address, and she was the first student ever to do that in the history of the university, she talked about how so many people accused her of being aggressive and overly ambitious, and like that's something that I'm accused of being pretty often. So I think with what Donald Trump is, when he makes a comment, it's considered rash and bold and against the status quo. But if Hillary Clinton says or does anything, she's accused of, like, even when she goes on to a talk show, she's accused of having too little and too much of every single possible emotion. And I feel like partially because she's been in the public sphere for so long and partially because we tend to, put onto women, like, a role of, like, maybe just submissiveness or just, you know, inaction,
right,
that everything that she does is hypercritical.
We don't criticize men for being aggressive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what is that all about?
I do think that some of the concerns with Hillary Clinton, like, are legitimate, though, but I'll let go.
I do agree that there's definitely a double standard for Hillary Clinton. She is a woman in politics, and it's kind of hard to get to the position where she is. And to get there, she needed to be very strong in what she believed and very opinionated and to do what she thinks is best. And that can, especially being a woman, come across as, like, out of character, like, aggressive. And it's not something that you'd see with, like, a male like Donald Trump if he's doing anything. It's in character. He's a dominant male. Like, that's how he's supposed to be. But, yeah, there's definitely a double standard for females and Hillary Clinton.
Sarah.
I know that a lot of people that support Donald Trump aren't supporting Hillary Clinton because she's a woman. I saw a thing where a Donald Trump supporter who was a woman said that I don't want to support her because she's a woman, and the guy informed her that, you know, all wars are started by men, because she thought that the fact that Hillary Clinton may have mood swings or whatever with menopause, she might start a war, which is kind of silly in my opinion. But also, like, when she was first nominated, they didn't talk about the stuff that she said. They talked about the fact that she matched pantsuits with someone.
Yeah, and her hair.
Yeah, which is, you'd never see.
Of course, now we do talk about Donald Trump's hair.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
a little. It's like it's a defining feature.
Right.
Yeah, but you'd never see that with a male candidate.
Right.
I mean, except for Donald Trump and his hair. But
he's an entertainer.
I mean, so it does seem like there is a double standard, and that's just not a good thing to have, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Hillary Clinton has been in the public spotlight for a long time in politics. Donald Trump hasn't really been in politics. But, I mean, there is a double standard for Hillary Clinton because she has a record. Like, people who are rational and people who don't say, I'm not going to vote for you because you're a woman, they might look at her war record, for instance, and see, oh, she's voted positive for most of the wars that we've fought in, and they wouldn't like that. But Donald Trump, who knows? He doesn't have a record.
No, he doesn't have any history. That's
kind of scary.
For some people, that's good, and for some people, that's bad.
Yeah.
I think it leaves a lot of room for, like, ambiguity. And I think when I was discussing it with my uncle, who I don't want to out him because he was actually, like, a very valiant Trump supporter until his wife made him stop.
I'm going to have you hold your thoughts, and we're going to come back. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We are going to take a brief break, but we'll return momentarily. Tuned in to 411 Teen, a conversational forum for teens and other interested folks. This is a fun program, and again, I just want to say thank you to all of you for coming. Hon, I had to interrupt you, okay? So you want to continue your comments you were making?
Okay, yeah, I guess. When my family was trying to dissuade my uncle, like, of his political beliefs, one of the arguments that we used is that like, Hillary Clinton may be a bad president. We've, you know, like, had some people that were, like, objectively bad presidents for 4 or even 8 years. But she would be conventionally bad in a way that would be easily reversible through the next presidency. Mm-hmm. And however attractive, you know, the unknown political beliefs of Donald Trump may be, I feel like he's a very risky and dangerous choice for the country. And even Hillary Clinton is, you know, hyper-scrutinized because of her public, you know, how long she's been a public servant. But I think it's also worth noting that she is, like, the woman in politics. And even when, you know, she obviously had to be informed because she's been our Secretary of State. And even if you don't agree with her policy, even if you don't agree with the way that she conducted herself, you do have to acknowledge the fact that she is a highly, like, you know, highly intelligent, highly informed individual. And I know even when she was, you know, she was the first lady of, I think, wasn't Bill Clinton Arizona or
Arkansas.
The other
Arizona.
Okay. But yeah, when she was the first lady of Arkansas, people were upset with her because she was attempting to, you know, work with women and children's issues in the state. And when she was First Lady of the United States, people were very, very critical of her, not only, like, her hairstyle, her outfits, but of her efforts for healthcare reform. And, you know, when President Obama does it, at least in the Democratic Party, he's praised, but especially, you know, for the time, even though the 90s aren't, you know, that long ago, her being a woman especially led her to scrutiny.
Okay. I have one more question I want to pose to you. Because so often you hear the presidential campaign as described as a war on warnings. I mean, Trump warns about Hillary, crooked Hillary. Hillary warns about Trump. You know, he doesn't have the intellectual capacity or the knowledge. And I just want to have you respond to that. Do you see that at all as a war on warnings at all?
I mean,
I'm just throwing it out there because it's often described that way, you know, and that's one perspective. That's one way that they are coming or attacking the whole issue. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I know, especially watching the Republican National Convention, it made the world seem apocalyptic and terrifying. But I know, I feel like that was also based mostly on feeling rather than fact, because I'm also aware of the fact that, you know, global poverty rates are going down and the homelessness rate in the U.S. has been decreasing. And I feel like, I know Stephen Colbert called Donald Trump, like, the fifth horseman of the apocalypse. And it's really, I think, when you're running against, like, if the since the Democratic Party has been, you know, in control of at least the presidency for the past 8 years, in order to, you know, become elected as the member of the opposing party, you have to paint it as if the world is in way worse shape now than it was 8 years ago, and that, you know, we're heading towards disaster. But one thing I really enjoyed about the DNC is I feel like they co-opted some of the RNC's traditional, like, you know, Reagan-esque views and values of, like, you know, patriotism, and you saw the chance of USA there, too. So, yeah, the warnings are terrifying. It makes our world seem much darker than I think it is. And I'm, you know, a pretty persistent optimist, so I'm against that sort of rhetoric.
I mean, I think that, like, even though the DNC was a lot more optimistic, I mean, you could still see those warnings even so. I mean, I think every speech that I watched had some sort of warning about how Donald Trump was just going to be terrible to the country. But I also think that just because of the nature of, like, the voter base, that's kind of necessary because the Republicans are trying to depend on convincing more moderates that if Hillary Clinton is president, she'll be crooked and corrupt. But Hillary Clinton's presidency is trying to convince moderate Democrats that even if her agenda is more liberal, it's, like, not as bad as it would be if Trump were president. So I kind of think that they have to have warnings. Oh, yeah. But, I mean, you also saw that kind of, from what I remember of, like, the 2012 election. I mean, there were definitely warnings that, I mean, I can't remember Mitt Romney specifically, but I know that Obama was taking Mitt Romney's comments and, like, twisting them around saying this is what's going to happen if he's president.
All right. Any other comments? Sarah?
I think that in this election, we're sort of, or people that can vote, are sort of forced to choose the lesser of two evils. And coming from a liberal, which is myself, I guess, Donald Trump is sort of a scary person to me. I mean, his policy is sort of incomplete, and it's sort of a hatred thing. It's a bigotry. And unfortunately, he represents a big group of people, and that's kind of terrifying. I mean, it's sort of radical, and Republicans now scare me more than they did before because I think they've changed the way they look at things. Like, in a nutshell, the sort of in simple terms, they're less social, they're less for social change, unlike they used to be back when it was like the 1800s, and they were supposed to be all for social change and for the people, and now they don't really seem to be, and I think that's just really scary.
Okay. Quinn.
Well, for me, the way the Republican National Convention shook out, Trump was in his element, and he made himself in his element. He made it like a reality TV show where everyone had to go against him, and he had to go against everyone else, and it had nothing to do with policy. So people were saying, oh, this is terrible, the country's going to – but it wasn't about policies. Like, but when Mitt Romney was going through his – he was very informed on all of the issues. Even if you didn't necessarily agree with him on the issues, you knew that he was informed about them. And the focus
That's
stayed
true.
On the issues.
Yeah.
Do you feel, you know, we talk about the supporters of Trump being kind of frightening, but I see it a different way. I think that the supporters of Trump just reflect the climate of the country. And, you know, I mean, I think that Trump says what a lot of people feel.
Thinking,
you know, and people don't say this. I mean, and yes, it may run against the grain of our country, But it's also the reality. There's a lot of people out there that have very negative feelings about various groups of people. And that's just the reality of it. And I think that Trump offers them, provides them, you know, a voice that they haven't had. And they now feel free to say how they feel, what their perspective is, what their ideology is. I'm looking at you, Olivia. Did you have something you wanted to say?
Yeah, well, I guess that's true, but also, like,
I think for a lot of people's livelihoods in this country, like, it's important that those opinions might not be heard so much just because, I don't know, like, for example, I'm a woman who wants to work in politics, and now that Donald Trump is running for president, it kind of validates to me, men who in higher up positions, sorry, Quinn, men in higher up positions who would want to say to women who stick up for what they believe in, call them nasty names. And like, to me, that's not, if we want to see those groups ever represented in politics, then like, we can't have a climate of discrimination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, I definitely agree, but I feel like when a lot of people talk about Donald Trump supporters, they paint them as, you know, ignorant hillbillies. And, you know, you may be, you have the right to be an ignorant hillbilly, like, it's cool.
Right.
But I feel like, you know, their votes are valid, their feelings may be, like, validated. But it's also important to note that the way that you feel shouldn't impose your way of life onto someone else. And you definitely, I know just a lot of, there's been a lot of anti-immigrant rhetoric. And, you know, like, as, you know, a first-generation immigrant to the U.S., The reason why I think Donald Trump's comments and supporters offend is because they strike at, like, the lifeblood of America. Mm-hmm. And as, like, since the U.S. is such an immigrant-based country, it hits very personally to, I think, the core of what America is.
But America is plagued with discrimination, and we cannot ignore that. That is the reality of it, okay? And whether we like it or not, it's there. And it is a fabric of American society, the whole origin of America. I mean, I'm not saying it's right, but I'm saying it's there. And that's real. And you have to be realistic with who and what you're dealing with. Does that make sense?
I think, I mean, I acknowledge that it's there, but I think in order to progress, you have to reject it. So, I mean, you are allowed to be a Donald Trump supporter, and your views are allowed to differ from mine, but
I'm not a Donald Trump.
I think especially not having a Trump supporter on here, I feel like we don't want to negatively, you know, paint them or invalidate their opinions. But I also feel like in order to respect someone else's opinion, you shouldn't embrace or validate bigotry. And I feel like that's something that I understand the tenets of republicanism. I don't think that Republicans are bad in any way, shape, or form. But I do think that the rhetoric and the course that Donald Trump's candidacy is taking is pretty scary to Republicans and Democrats alike. And Chanda's going to add on to that.
Okay. So, yeah, there are definitely a lot of tensions between different groups in our country and around the world. And usually they're not communicated as loudly as they are in this election. Mm-hmm. And this, like, political election has given us, like, the opportunity for those tensions to kind of, like, reveal themselves. And I think it's much better that they're out there in the open so people can deal with it. And we know, okay, this is here, this is a problem, and we need to fix it. And I think it's a lot better than, like, them kind of sitting inside of us and, like, boiling there.
Mm-hmm. So. Why do you think we see, and you mentioned this, why do you think we see the tendencies and the bigotries and the rhetoric more so in this election than we have in the past? Quinn, and then I'll get to you too, Sarah.
I think that Trump has used a very interesting tactic to get his way to where he is now, and that's he's tapped into national anger.
And fear and ignorance.
And fear and ignorance.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But to me, the national anger, they want to direct it at something. And Trump is directing it. And we are a very immigrant-based country. And people want to hear something new when they get to a point like this where the parties are, you know, a little similar and things like that, my opinion, again. But they want to hear something new, and Trump is completely new. And so if you have anger like that, the fear and ignorance, those are other problems altogether. But if you have anger like that, it wants to be directed somewhere, and it will be directed somewhere if there's someone who comes along that can tap into it. And I think that's what Donald Trump is using.
Sarah.
I think that now that Donald Trump is running for president, that the people who are based in this fear and ignorance and discrimination have a voice. Issues of immigration and civil rights and now sort of competing for the non-white vote have always sort of been around. And now that Donald Trump is running for president, he's sort of building on this to get people to support him. And it's just the fact that we also have Donald Trump supporters who are imposing their views onto people in violent ways and in ways that they shouldn't be is not good either. I mean, I've seen a thing where it's this person talking about the stereotype of Southern white people and how they have the accent and how it may make them look stupid or like Donald Trump supporters. And he's like a really big liberal. He was a Bernie Sanders supporter. And he was talking about how he saw this sign that said, "Make America White Again." Mm-hmm. And that sort of plays into the whole thing that America wasn't really white to begin with. I mean, we're based in immigration, like Quinn and Hannah said. And
yeah, but white folks were much more in control than they are. I mean, come on. Yeah. No, it wasn't. But it was a white man's world.
It was.
It still is. Uh-huh. I mean, but there are some changes going on.
Which is really good.
Yeah, but. Which is good.
Yeah. Sorry, Quinn, again.
It's still allowed to be like... Go on.
I know, even in my English class, my teacher, she pointed to Quinn and like the two other white guys in our class and started like preaching to them about their privilege. And I agree that we're in a new world order. I'm looking forward to it as a woman of color. Yeah. I'm like, really into the fact mm-hmm. that I can, pursue the career that I want. But also Quinn, you're allowed to be a white man, do whatever you want, you're cool, there's nothing.
I feel like there's a sort of
impulse to guilt you into feeling bad for what you've been born with, and that's really cool, do with it what you will and enjoy yourself.
Yeah, we can't fight mm-hmm. hatred with hatred. I mean.
Yeah.
Also,
no, Tanda.
Yeah, so I think the reason why these tensions are kind of surfacing now is because we have a candidate, Trump, who allows all this. He's he doesn't discourage it. Like, oh no, we don't have these tensions. We're not. We love everyone. No, he knows that there might. He takes that the tension between groups. He allows it and he builds on it. And mm-hmm. then I think that's a lot where his support base comes from. People being allowed to talk.
Mm-hmm. And, he fuels it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's okay. And then I'll get to you.
I think that it's been coming on for a long time.
Yeah.
And I think that it's important for it to happen, because if it doesn't happen, then it stays where it is. And it's like we were talking about before, it just kind of stays in and boils up. So these kind of things happen periodically. Like it happened at the end of the Civil War. It happened at the end of the Civil Rights Movement. It happened in the 70s and 60s mm-hmm. for women. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, they have to happen in order for change to happen. And now that we have social media, everything's changed, and it can happen a lot faster than it would have happened before. Uh-huh. And so I think we're living right now in a time where the pace of change has accelerated a lot faster than it would have before, because we didn't have such instant contact. And yeah.
Social media just adds a whole different dynamic to it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and perspective. Yes, ma'am, Olivia.
I think what's just frustrating about Trump's comments and the representation of discrimination in the Republican Party, too, is that, it's also just bad for the Republican reputation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that, I don't know, because of my nature and because of the way I've been raised, and also because of, I think I come into politics with already some pre-discrimination in my mind that many Republicans have beliefs that are discriminatory or may not be in the best interest of the poor. And that's not to say all Republicans, just certain factions of Republicans. And a lot of Republican candidates have made moves to try and diversify the party because they know mm-hmm. that their party is largely white
mm-hmm.
men.
Yeah.
And I think that even though it's not the change that I would have wanted to see, I think that they're on the right track. But when you have someone like Donald Trump, who is alienating minority voters from all parties or who might be undecided, alienating women with his comments.
I gotta stop you. We have run out of time. We haven't even addressed the issues yet. This is fantastic. To my listening audience, tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. This edition of 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistance, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available, and if you want to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Team podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.